Fewer people signing up for unemployment.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. It's the Morning Open. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Those weekly jobless claims keep dropping, but how important is it really? We're going to talk about it coming up. First, where's Wall Street? Markets are up right now. The S&P up by 2/3%, NASDAQ more than 3/4%, the Dow higher now by 58.5 points, 10,894. Shares in Europe are higher right now as well, about 0.5%, and in Asia, markets closed mostly mixed today. Analysts were expecting the number to be much smaller. The number of people who filed for jobless claims last week fell by 14,000. The Labor Department also said this morning the number of unemployed workers hanging on to benefits was at the lowest level since December of 2008. Diane Swonk is chief economist at Mesirow Financial. She's with us live this morning from Chicago. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning.
Jobless claims fell. Ongoing claims fell as well. Which one is really the one to keep an eye on?
Well, the one that's more important is ongoing claims, of course, because at the end of the day, it's really long-term unemployed, and the people we want to re-engage in the labor force, we want to make sure that we're bringing them back in again. And that number, although it fell, is still at such high levels, and the decline was small relative to what it should be given the stage of the recovery, that it really wasn't enough to get excited about.
And if a lot of sectors are hiring, Diane, why are the monthly reports showing we're still losing jobs and pretty much treading water?
Well, last month, the report was artificially suppressed by the heavy snows in the southeast where people actually couldn't get to work, and those payroll losses will be recouped in the month of March. Absent snowstorms, we actually saw a gain in the month of February, but the gains are still very small, and they're uneven. We're seeing manufacturing jobs are likely to show their third month in a row as an increase, but these are small increases given the hundreds of thousands of jobs that have already been lost.
And we've got the Fed chairman very quickly, Diane, Bernanke going to Capitol Hill to talk about sort of an exit strategy for the Fed's financial crisis policy. What's he going to say?
Well, he's going to say that he's going to try to stop buying mortgages at the end of the month, which he likely will be able to because, frankly, the demand for housing is so weak. But the emergency facilities they put in, they are unwinding out of. That is not the same as saying that we're going to raise interest rates anytime soon. And, in fact, this Fed will stay on the sidelines in terms of keeping the zero interest rate policy for some time to come.
We'll have to wrap it up there. Diane Swonk from Chicago. Thanks.
Thank you.
After a marathon in getting a health care overhaul through Congress, leaders are prepping for another brisk run, financial regulations. A couple of Democrats, Christopher Dodd, the senator from Connecticut, and House Financial Services Committee Chair Barney Frank met with President Obama yesterday, and they're leading the effort to pass the bank reforms in Congress. But is there enough momentum, or is there the will? Matthew Bishop is U.S. business editor for The Economist magazine and co-author of The Road from Ruin. Welcome to the program.
Great to be with you.
What kind of reforms do we need to ensure recovery?
We're not going to recover from this crisis unless we get real leadership and real policy change. And my worry is at the moment that Congress has shown itself to be incapable of actually taking the big picture view of reform. And Wall Street has resisted any serious attempt to change how it does business. So my fear is that we just end up back where we started with a very vulnerable financial system.
If you look at the stock market right now in this country, it's looking a lot better than it was, say, a year, year and a half ago. What's the reality there with what's happening in the economy?
The economy is still stuck, I think, in the emergency ward, and there's no real policies out there to get it back on its feet again. And so my worry is that the government policy of pumping up the economy can only last so long and is already showing signs of running out. So what happens next?
What do you think the United States can learn from other economies around the world?
Well, I think America can learn a lot from looking at Japan in the 1990s, where policymakers and business leaders together refused to acknowledge that they had to change. I think America is different in some ways, but I think there's a real chance that we just don't get back on the path of growth because the politicians and the business leaders don't take the hard decisions necessary. I mean, I think the world actually wants America to get back to the things it does best, which is to be innovative and productive, because actually the rest of the world for 25 years has been looking to America for leadership, and the sooner it does get back on its feet, the better.
Matthew Bishop is U.S. business editor and New York bureau chief for The Economist magazine. He co-authored the book, The Road from Ruin. Mr. Bishop, thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Thursday, March 25th, 2010, at marketplace.org. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke heads to Capitol Hill today. He talks to lawmakers a lot, but this time, instead of looking back at the financial crisis, he's going to be looking forward to some sort of exit strategy. He'll be briefing lawmakers on how the Fed plans to end its policy of cheap and easy lending for banks. Marketplace's Brett Neely is with us from our Washington studio this morning to talk about it. Good morning, Brett.
Good morning, Steve.
Why does the Fed even need an exit strategy?
Well, it's important to remember what we're exiting from. When credit markets started to freeze at the peak of the crisis, the Fed dumped an unprecedented amount of money into the financial system. Plus, interest rates have been effectively zero for more than a year, though Bernanke says rates will rise as the economy recovers. If Bernanke and the Fed exit too fast, banks could stop lending again. Too slow, we could have high inflation or high unemployment.
Now, Bernanke's approach, Brett, has gotten a lot of criticism from fellow economists, and some of his critics are also testifying today. What are they going to say?
The critics are all over the place. One criticism of Bernanke's exit strategy is that it's too vague and needs clearer benchmarks for what the Fed's going to do at different stages. Another argument that most Americans can relate to is that the Fed will prioritize fighting inflation over creating jobs. So it could raise rates before the jobless rate falls more, and that would stop the job market recovery cold, which is an exit strategy no one wants to see.
Marketplace's Brett Neely in Washington. Brett, thanks.
Thank you.
Honeybee keepers in this country are reporting a crisis, and it seems to be getting worse. Some beekeepers are reporting extreme losses this year, and a new study out today suggests pesticides may play a bigger role than previously thought. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sarah Gardner reports.
For several years now, a massive honeybee die-off has puzzled U.S. experts. They still don't know exactly what's causing it. Scientists meeting today in San Francisco hear results of a new Penn State study showing, quote, unprecedented levels of pesticides in pollen and hives across the U.S. Bee expert Eric Musson at the University of California, Davis, says certain combinations of pesticides may be helping to kill off bees already weakened by disease.
Right now, we're more or less saying it's sort of like the movie The Perfect Storm, where a number of stresses are all sort of ganging up at once, and finally the bees are just giving in.
Honeybees pollinate about a third of our food crops. That's almost $15 billion worth of U.S. fruits and vegetables. An informal survey by the USDA found one-third of commercial bee brokers had a hard time finding enough beehives to pollinate California's almond trees, the largest almond crop in the world. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
This morning, Verizon rolled out a new application for its Android and BlackBerry smartphones. The nation's biggest wireless carrier will allow subscribers to make calls using Skype, the voice-over internet service. Here's Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman.
If you have Skype Mobile and the person you call in, say, Israel or Brazil does too, the call is free. That's because it's traveling along Verizon's data network just like any other internet connection. The companies are pitching this hard in a new YouTube video.
You can make unlimited calls to other people on Skype, and they won't use up your plan minutes or incur data charges. Talk as long as you want.
Maggie Reardon of the technology news site CNET was at the Vegas trade show where the app was unveiled. She says unlike when you use Skype on a computer or iPhone, with Verizon, it'll always be on.
They don't even have to be logged into the application. They can just pick up the call, and that's pretty cool.
It wasn't that long ago that Verizon was dead set against this idea.
Christopher Collins tracks consumer technology at the Yankee Group. He says the wireless industry has mostly tried to block us from making internet calls on cell phones. That's so we'll have to pay for all those minutes.
Why this is not necessarily Verizon eating its own lunch, as some might have said, is it's just an acknowledgement of the fact that wireless is increasingly becoming all about data. And the traditional way of thinking about, well, I'll buy a plan that gives me so many voice minutes, that's just becoming increasingly irrelevant.
What is driving revenue? Expensive smartphones and high-end data plans to match, both of which you'll need to reach Skype's 500 million users worldwide. One thing you won't get on a Skype mobile app, by the way, video calling. Think about it. Those cell phone cameras all point the wrong way. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
President Obama begins a tour promoting his health care plan with a visit to Iowa today. The White House says he's going to focus on the impact on small businesses and individuals. Iowa Public Radio's Sarah McCammon asked some Iowans what the overhaul means for them.
The president is returning to the university town of Iowa City, where he kicked off a push for health care reform while campaigning for his party's nomination in 2007.
This is kind of where he got his start, and not necessarily just with the health care, but with his whole presidential election. He owes a lot to the state of Iowa.
At a cigar shop in Des Moines, the state's biggest city, manager Kai Harris says he's mostly pleased with how the president has followed through on health care.
Some people on the left are a little disappointed in not having single payer. That can come in the future, but it had to start somewhere.
Across the street, Mary Evans runs a gift shop that smells of candles and is full of brightly colored knickknacks. Evans says she's glad the president is visiting Iowa, but she's skeptical of his approach.
Being a small business owner, I have two or three employees, and it's pretty tough. We just need less government, actually, is what we need.
The president's speech is scheduled for this afternoon at the University of Iowa. I'm Sarah McCammon for Marketplace.
No big official celebrations for Greek Independence Day today. The country's financial mess put an end to that. And as European leaders meet for a high-stakes economic summit, Greece is likely to come up in a big way. As Marketplace European correspondent Stephen Beard reports, the debate over a bailout centers on the International Monetary Fund.
IMF help is anathema to some European countries, especially France. For the French, it's akin to begging the US to come and clean up the mess in Europe's backyard. But the Germans want outside help. It would save their taxpayers a bundle. It now looks as if the Germans will get their way. Analysts here say Greece is now likely to request IMF aid. But, says Andrew Hilton of the CSFI think tank, that aid will be limited under IMF rules to less than $20 billion. And yet Greece needs to borrow more than three times as much this year.
It's rather like a guy lying in the desert, dying of thirst, and you give him a bottle of whiskey and say, drink it. Well, it gets you over the short-term hump, but it may create a longer-term problem.
He says Greece is broke. It can't afford to repay what it's borrowed. It will have to renegotiate its debt and, if all else fails, default. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
And finally, the British government's been tackling a more targeted version of healthcare reform, a redesign of hospital gowns. They're being called dignity gowns. A couple of designers have produced some promising concepts. One of them has a pouch for a cell phone, presumably to call and complain about the food. Another, thankfully, eliminates that embarrassing open back. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.